We now turn to the file 21lect.b.pdf, which takes up our second topic. This will be a little shorter. We're about an hour in. If I get this done in a half hour, we're in good on giving you back the time that I overran with instrumental variables. And so the topic here is an extension of some of the things we've done. It's reciprocal causal effects. Does X cause Y, or does Y cause X? Sometimes it's called non-recursive models in observational studies. As this is going to be survey data or other designed where people do what they want and we look at it. And there's two kinds of reciprocal causal effects data structures. One is cross-sectional data, which is the IV domain, simultaneous equations, and we'll look at a number of examples of that, where we don't have longitudinal observations on X and Y, we just have one cross-section. We know there's an association, and try to disentangle it by using instrumental variables, and that's supply and demand type things. We'll look peer aspirations, education and fertility, the Juno example, and other examples like that. And we have a number of data analyses. So that's a continuation of instrumental variables. We'll see some examples from Woolridge's text. And then probably the richer situation, longitudinal data. In fact, simultaneous equations or the cross-sectional associations are one of the motivations for getting longitudinal data, such as TV violence and aggression, where you might have early measures of TV violence and aggression, and later measures of TV violence and aggression, and you try to use those to sort out the direction of causality, whether it be successful or not. It's a more advanced type of study, and cross-legged correlation is one of the methods in social science that's been especially used, or a close cousin, path regressions. And so we'll come back to path analysis again. And so I did a review of analysis of reciprocal effects some years ago, International Encyclopedia. It's been reprinted in a number of places. It kind of lays out what we have. We haven't really made great progress in any new ideas. This is a hard question. It's a common question. So let's look at some of the examples. From last Super Bowls, are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? That is a good question. They have a nice video of it. There's reciprocal effects. Do happy people win more, or do winning people, are they happier, or is it a bit of both? Second time, and we have a number of these, screen time rots kids' minds, and we'll see the path analysis for that. So in this second example, is it that children who are struggling with development spend more time looking at screens, or is it that screens destroy their developmental progress? Same thing with internet use and depression. This is an older study where they have internet addiction, IA, got to have an acronym. Does that lead to more depression among kids, or kids that are somewhat depressed do more things on the internet? A classic paper, Peer Influences, which is not a longitudinal study. This is simultaneous equations, and we'll do the data analysis for it. Peer influences on aspirations. Do your friends influence you? Social network. It's a baby social network type thing. Education and fertility, which is Juno. Do kids that are going to drop out experience pregnancies, or do pregnancies cause kids to drop out? And that's the simultaneous equations approach. The longitudinal data, the original TV violence and aggression goes back 50 years, and we'll see it does the same kind of analyses that are done now, cross-legged correlations or path regressions. And then a Nobel Prize worthy reciprocal effects, money supply and GDP. economic time series, where you have multiple observations on things. That's called Granger causality. Pearson Howe is that. And it's really a time series prediction issue, much of the same sort here, but did get a Nobel Prize, so let's give it some props. Crossline correlation, which is one of the most common ways of doing this, I've written about way back 40 years ago, trying to stop it. We'll see some things. John Fox has, using R, does the peer influences example. Those are a couple of useful readings. So let's turn to PDF page 2. Reciprocal effects and simultaneous equations. So cross-log correlation is applied to longitudinal data, and that'll be the second thing we look at. You basically have TV violence and aggression, say, at age 8 and also at age 18, and you look at the cross-legged correlations between TV violence and later aggression, or between early aggression and later TV violence, and try to assign causal predominance based on comparing those two correlations. Right. And this has thousands of advocates. Causal predominance, which is probably not the only question you want to ask. The non-recursive feedback models, which are cross-sectional, which might be your aspirations and your friend's aspirations, is X3 and X4. And people are trying to untangle the simultaneity bias, because U and V will be correlated by those sorts of things. Doesn't solve the observational studies, omitted variables and all sorts of other things, but it does try to disentangle, get consistent estimates of beta 4.3 and beta 3.4. Those are the path analysis things. So feedback models try to get at this by regression, cross-log correlation, or panel regressions with longitudinal data, may or may not be any more successful. Those are the two types of getting at this hard question, does X cause Y or does Y cause X? Causal predominance is not the only way to answer the question. PDF page 3. So does A cause B or does B cause A? TV violence and aggression, personality characteristics and drug use, self-esteem and achievement. Do people with higher self-esteem then achieve more? California embarked on that under Vasconcelos way back, that is, self-esteem was what you teach, not reading and writing. Or do people of higher achievement have higher self-esteem? Does winning make you happy? Does happy make you winning? And here's the cross-hard correlation diagram on PDF page 3. We'll come back to that. So just one example, study links excessive internet use to depression. People who spend a lot of time surfing the internet are more likely to show signs of depression. British scientists say so. We believe it. There's an association. So does the internet cause depression, or whether depressed people are drawn to it? And that's the interesting thing. Excessive internet use is associated with depression. Question is, are depressed people drawn to the internet, or does the internet cause depression? That's the reciprocal effects question. We know there's an association. How do we untangle it? We really don't know how to, but it's a rich research question. So in the internet depression, in summary, we found a PDF page 5 from their actual publication. We found a clear link between internet addiction and depression, significantly more depressed. What is not clear from these data, which comes first? Are depressed people drawn to the internet, or is excessive internet use make one more prone to depression? This needs further work and a way of doing it, but that's the classic reciprocal effects question that's gone on for decades and decades. Okay, to go through the IV, PDF page 6, here is our standard regression model. Why we need X1 and X2 as instruments is because U and V will be confounded by the feedback, the non-recursive model, and we can actually work out the bias and how instrumental variables, say some background exogenous variables in the Duncan Porter Hollis paper, allow you to at least remove the simultaneity bias. It doesn't solve the observational studies. We're not assigning people to friends or assigning people to anything else. Okay, so PDF page 7 has the full rundown, just to show you, of the simple non-recursive feedback model boxed in the middle. We also have data analysis examples at the bottom from Woolridge using the data we use for the IV, the PSID data, where you can have a reciprocal effects, and that's done in legacy STAT 209 lab 3. We'll make mention of it, but it's only so much I'm going to try to do here because I'm trying to get done in a half hour. So the path analysis picture and the regression equations give you the layout here. Because of the simultaneity, we have some problems that we try to get at. The OLS estimates will show simultaneity bias, and we work out, Duncan in his text works it out. And then I also show you the IV estimates, writing them out in detail. You can even do data analysis, try to get at these from the residuals, which is really substituting in for one of the X's, one of the instruments. As you can see, those are going to be consistent. That is biased asymptotically. And so there's simultaneity bias. So that's why they do instrumental variables to get at reciprocal effects. But it's just getting still at untangling the association. You don't really have any as if by experiments or causal inferences you can make. That's PDF page 7 and the PSID data. If you want to look at it in the legacy STAT 209, you can see some of the issues in running IV reg with those kind of data. So these are also, there's just give a shout out to Berkeley. I mean, the standard economic and econometric examples are supply and demand. And here's one with telecommunications. I just threw that in for illustration. From Woolridge's text, which is a great text of introductory econometrics, I just scanned, and the scan isn't that good. But here's his reciprocal effects for simultaneous equations example. Additional law enforcement and murder rates. Higher murder rates might instigate additional law enforcement, or additional law enforcement might suppress murder rates. How do those linked equations work? And non-recursive models, and that's how it works. And he works out simultaneity bias, which we did in the handout. But there's another page 530 of Woolridge's text. Get the actual text and read through that section 16.2. We also use multiple instruments. We've only talked about using one instrument, but you can think of a two-stage least squares interpretation, which can work through if you're interested in. Of course, IV Reg does that. But you're basically fitting based on the instruments and then doing the same sort of analysis you did for simple least squares. David Friedman proved in general, and we looked at that in our instrumental variables section with hat matrices, this for multiple predictors. So I just threw that in as a just as a marker. Here is, and this is from Fox's sociological methodology paper that's linked. Here is the peer aspirations. So the variables we're interested in are Y5 and Y6, and we have this on our handout again. Respondents' occupational aspiration, that's the target person, and friends' occupational aspiration. How do your friends influence you? So those are Y5, Y6. Those go back and forth because peers influence each other, presumably. And then you have a bunch of exogenous variables that you can use as instruments. Respondents intelligent, respondents SES, that is the target person, and then friends, family, friends intelligence, that is IQ score. So if you have smarter friends, they might influence you more. Maybe if you have smart and rich friends, you might choose to emulate them, or you might choose to say, I'm not going to be like that. So you don't know, but that's the standard analysis. This is the 1971 Duncan paper that kind of stands till today as the way people do things. And so they got the estimates. And so PDF page 15, just jumping ahead, is our handout equivalent of that analysis. So we worked through it. And what I did is take the correlation matrix, and then I can either estimate the standardized regression coefficients directly from the correlation matrix, or easier, just use MVR norm to generate correlation matrix, generate individual data which have the same correlation matrix as this empirical observation. That'll give me, that makes it easy to do it. So pretending I have the real data, I just use two-stage least squares. I could have used IV reg, but this was originally done. And you can compare it with the OLS, and for what it's worth, get the coefficients, the beta 5.6 and the beta 6.5. And draw your own conclusions whether this tells you anything about how friends influence each other, but it is the simultaneity bias application. For Duncan, Hall, or Portis, we also have a second example, which is RINFIS, Education and Fertility, which is a 1980 paper that David Friedman takes up in great detail in his text. He reprints it, Education and Fertility, Implications for the Roles Women Occupy. And goes through, and we want to look at the respondents' education, that is years of schooling completed, and respondents' age at first birth, that is when they had their first kid. And the idea being, does getting pregnant cause you to drop out of school, or do people that want to drop out of school get pregnant? And you could ask about that being a reciprocal effects type question. So refer to PDF page 17, the second page of the handout, where I reprinted RINFIS's actual figure, believe it or not, okay, and showing you have education and age, age of first child, in a feedback type thing. And you have all sorts of predictors of respondents, father's education, race of respondent, respondents' number of siblings, farm background, region, household composition, respondents' religious preferences, smoking or not, miscarriage at first birth or not, all sorts of background variables to try to disentangle this age of first pregnancy and education achieved. And what you get from these regression analyses, giant IV analyses, is education is significant in the prediction of age of first child. Age is not significant in the prediction of education. Therefore, education, the educational level you choose influences the age at first pregnancy. That is, those that are going to drop out then get pregnant. It isn't that pregnancy causes dropouts, according to their idea. Whether or not you take any of this seriously, it is a canonical publication. Okay, and David Friedman in his text goes through it in great detail. So it's PDF page 18, interplay between education and fertility, shows you the endogenous and exogenous variables on PDF page 18, so you can see what they got. And this is, you know, 1,800 women, et cetera, et cetera. And they use two Sayre scores, i.e. IVs. The main empirical finding on page PDF 19, which I already said, the estimated coefficient of age is not significantly significant. The woman who dropped out of school because she got pregnant at age 16 would have dropped out anyway. The causal arrow points from education to age of first pregnancy, not the other way. And then he goes through, of course, a good logical explanation about not taking any of this seriously. And importantly, and this is good to read through, possible experiments that would do the as-if by experiment. This is an attempt at getting it as-if by experiment without doing one. Here are the experiments on PDF page 19 you could do. And that's a good way to think about things. Whether there's any causal inference to make from Rehnquist's analysis, I'll leave to you. I think you know my opinion, but these are the canonical ways people go about it. There's lots and lots of other analyses that might be less sound than this. Reciprocal effects is hard. And we should be clear about how hard it is, especially trying to do these complicated sorts of things. Then talks about a little more on instrumental variables, et cetera, et cetera, on PDF page 20. And I'll leave that for you to read the words of David Friedman if you want to get further into this. So now moving to the last section and going to longitudinal data, which is something I participated in a lot. Cross-legged correlation is the way people try to do it. Longitudinal data are much richer because you get an earlier and later value. So presumably you could try to follow the longitudinal effects. You've separated out the association by letting time elapse. You have repeated measurements. You can kind of see, is change in aggression associated with change in TV violence or level of TV violence viewing? You can think of all sorts of ways of getting at this, and we talk a little more about this in Stat 222, the longitudinal course, which I did for the last time in the fall. So PDF page 21 reminds you of cross-legged correlation. You compare these two correlations and you award causal predominance. That's the use of longitudinal data that dominates. And here's the picture on PDF page 22. You just get two observations on TV violence, two observations on aggression, and compare the correlation or run the path analysis. There's no simultaneous effect. Effects are lagged, and you could think of a timeline for effects being lagged. And here is, and this was the president of American Psychological Association at the time, Crano, was a student of Don Campbell's. This was a Don Campbell idea. This is one of my favorites, and this is their actual statement. Doing that little procedure you saw, cross-legged correlation, with the introduction of the cross-legged panel correlation method, causal inferences based on correlational data obtained in longitudinal studies can be made and enjoy the same logical status as those derived in the more standard experimental settings. So the idea is you compare these two correlations, this very difficult substantive question, important one, and it's as good as doing an experiment. Yeah. And just to show you, here's some PDF page 24, this stuff I write on the board. You could think of this reciprocal effects longitudinally. So PDF page 24 just gives a quick scrawl that I write on the board of the basic situation where you could think of linked differential equations that may be lagged. People can solve these. If you solve them under very special circumstances, everybody replications of each other, you could get to a situation where the regression equations were relevant, or a time series situation where Granger causality comes in. With discrete data, you can do the same sort of thing. Lazarsfeld's 16-fold table is a classic example of looking at associations. So this is a general thing. We want to understand parameters of, say, linked differential equations. That's pretty hard to get at. What is done, and I use this as this came from a Sage book, which looked familiar because all they did is lift the review article I wrote. But that's fine. That didn't even change. Cross-legged effects models, two-wave model. You have the regression equation. You have the differential equations. You can take a look at it there or in my paper. I thought this was amusing. PDF page 25. And so the classic example, does television violence cause aggression? This is Aaron et al., 1972. And we'll take a look at what they have. They have 427 teenagers. Who had participated, and what you have, PDF page 27 shows you the cross-legged correlation diagram, where It all went from violent TV to later aggression. So you have it in the third grade and the 13th grade, i.e. after high school. And the comparison of the two cross-log correlations, which after all is as good as an experiment, according to Crano and others, it's a wipeout. It's all violent TV influencing aggression rather than more aggressive kids looking for violent TV. Okay, good as an experiment. So they do have causal analysis. Yes, it's not casual, it's causal. I looked carefully. Okay, significant correlation supports the hypothesis that preferring to watch violent television, Starsky and Hutch, is a cause of aggressive behavior. And they do some hemming and hawing about it, but this is the cross-legged correlation. And then on PDF page 28, I pulled out, they do the same thing with path coefficients. That is the regression version. It gives you the same thing. It's all TV violence influencing aggression rather than aggression influencing TV violence. This is as if by experiment, watching violent television contributes to the development of aggressive habits. Causal effects, path analysis. People believe this, okay? And it's not just current generations. It's been going on for a long time. These are as good as experiments. So back in 1980 or 1979, when I was at the University of Chicago, right, I tried to stop people from doing cross-log correlation, going through and working out everything. This was a lead article in Psychological Bulletin, which is a big deal journal. They've now split off the statistics part because they didn't like me having lead articles. And so, you know, I said, cross-log correlation, not a useful procedure. Don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. And the result is, and this may be a good lesson for those assuming academic careers where you count citations, I never have, but you write a paper like this trying to stop people doing it, the causal winners is a silly idea, and so we go through all that, is what you will get is hundreds and hundreds of papers saying, even though Ragosa, Duncan, Goldberger, Art Goldberg and I worked on this, told us not to do it, we're going to do it anyways. And that's how you build up citations in your academic career. That wasn't the import here. I wanted people to get more serious. But, you know, you get citations, not satisfaction. So went through all this, did the basic analyses. No justification was found for the use of cross-log correlation. That isn't going to stop. I refer to Duncan, blah, 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 you know, tried to be reasonable. In the casual models paper, which was linked under the path analysis, I go through this also probably more succinctly. Cross-log correlation purports to answer the question, is X cause Y or is Y cause X, and causal predominance and all that sort of thing. So if you want to read a quick version of it, it's on page 31, and we walked through mathematical demonstrations and lag reciprocal effects, PDF page 32. If you're interested in the topic, this is a good place to read. Ragosa in 1980 was only one in a tradition of papers, starting with Duncan, Goldberger, and Heisley. Heisley and Cook and Campbell, although it was Don's idea, are unenthusiastic. Yeah, but yet most advocates ran undaunted. Right. So you can try to help, but necessarily not. Okay. So that's the reciprocal effects. And just to finish up, here are a couple more examples. Screen time and children's performance on a developmental screening test. So PDF page 34 showing you the very best journals, JAMA, and recent, i.e. 2 years ago, are still doing the same sort of thing you saw from Aaron et al. In 1970. So it hadn't gotten any better. Longitudinal cohort study used three-wave cross-legged panel model, Calgary, Alberta, drawn from all our family study. Data were available 24, 36, and 16 months. A cross-legged panel model revealed that higher levels of screen time at 24 and 36 months were significantly associated with poor performance on developmental screening tests at 60 months. And they claim they've controlled everything. Results of the study support the directional association between screen time and child development. i.e. screens rot your mind. It says JAMA, and it's, you know, the current timeline. So the stuff never dies. And if you want to see their picture, page 35, PDF page 35, and you have it. And basically, just a more complicated version of the standard panel model. No more persuasive. And as you can see on PDF page 35, they also throw in a bunch of additional background predictors. Why not? It's multiple regression. And that's the conclusion that supports the as if by experiment conclusion. If this kid spent less screen time, their developmental trajectory would be far better. That's the as if by experiment that JAMA Pediatrics is giving you. You can see that's not something you really want to do. And so then the last four pages, I reprinted or grabbed the old reciprocal effects review. We've kind of gone through all of this, but if you want to read something, it's three pages of quick text that goes through a lot of the historical sorts of things. It's written 80s, but it's still relevant today. And go through cross-log correlation, PDF page 37. Structural equation models, that is the Heise regression that you saw with Aaron et al. And you just saw with JAMA. Mention a continuous time feedback models and some things you could say about those and how those might be able to derive a simpler regression version out of them. And methods for categorical data, multiple time series. Reciprocal effects, extremely difficult enterprise. Great questions. You can see all the great research questions, whether it be Michelob or whether it be TV violence. And you wanted to see some of the classic papers on this. It's all referenced here. So that'll end our quick tour of reciprocal effects. In some sense, it's great examples of as if by experiment conclusions attempted based on very meager justification, because these are important questions. Video game violence and aggression or violent behavior, we see that all over. Whether any of these ideas should be given causal attributions from longitudinal data, I'll leave to you to decide, you know, my opinion. But it's an important aspect of observational data. Maybe we'll think of better ways of getting at it. You saw from Friedman's rundown, you can think of experiments to do, even if they're thought experiments, but they may be useful experiments. That's probably a far better way to go. But this is a great set of examples of where trying to attack really hard questions, really interesting questions, with meager methods leads you. And it leads you to people saying all sorts of stuff. And so at all sorts of stuff, we'll end, that's a good way of ending the unit on observational data or legacy methods. We're going to turn to looking at matching methods, which I can be more positive about. At least matching methods tell you when you should not try. And in some sense, we'll go through that. We'll go through historical matching to see what we're trying to do, and then implementations of modern matching methods, which you started in the fall quarter, those of you that were with Professor Basset. And we'll start from scratch and work through some of those additional examples. So thank you very much. We're at the end of Unit 2. Let's call it to a close.